I give him great credit for it.
Mm-hmm. And they're turning out to very successful
yes.
young designers.
Ford and GM and so on are giving them good scholarships now and helping, you know, and that's a place to go today.
What about the one in Pasadena that's gotten so much press lately?
Well, that's the Los Angeles Art Center.
That's
the one I'm talking about. That was Tink Adams. I used to go out there when I was at Ford and give graduation talks and so on. Matter of fact, one day I went out there. I arrived at the hotel, the Beverly Hilton, and the night before my speech, they had an earthquake. First earthquake I was ever in. The next morning I went to the with Tink Adams, who was the founder and president of the Los Angeles Art Center, and we had an old wooden auditorium, about 500 students in it, about a third of which were industrial design, and I gave a talk. During the talk, the goddamn school burned down. Fire came out, everybody was exited out, fire engines were there, a lot of smoke, no real damage except at the far end. So everybody was brought back in and sat down. Tink Adams got up and said, "That's the hottest graduation talk we've ever had." And on my way home, the third event, I was over Chicago in a lightning storm, and the plane got hit by lightning and put a hole 3 foot in diameter in the wing, and I was sitting there watching it. And we were brought down quickly and landed with foam on the airport, no damage, but I had an Air Force colonel sitting next to me. It was about 5 minutes before the captain came on and said anything about it. He says, "Ladies and gentlemen, you probably noticed we were hit with a small bolt of lightning." And the Air Force colonel says, "Boy," he says, "there's the understatement of the day, a small bolt of lightning." We got out of the plane, walked out, and we had a 3 foot hole right between the two engines on the right hand side. So that was my trip to a fire, an earthquake, and a bolt of lightning. So I said to Tink, "Never again." Somebody's telling me something.
Has William Schmidt Associates ever done any design work for the aviation industry?
We've done some planes for people like Aero Commando, special planes. Never any military planes, no.
Do you fly yourself?
No, I don't.
You don't? Have you ever thought of flying?
Yeah. I have a boat. I like that. When the engine stops, I can sit on the water, but when the engine stops in a plane, I can't. So I'm a boater.
What's the newest wrinkles in boat design? What have you noticed in recent years?
Well, there again, the Italians are really leaders in boat design today. All the bigger boats are designed by Italians.
Hmm. What sort of boats? Are they sleek and low slung?
Very much so. Mm-hmm. And it's coming into this country. Trojan just had a Farina design a boat. Magnum did too. So both American countries gone over to Europe to the Italian design. They're very expensive boats, but can't be afforded by many people, but boy, they are tremendous in appearance. And quite a change, a drastic change from the boats as you know them.
With your interest in boating, you undoubtedly have sought out, or at least been receptive to, design contracts in the boating industry.
We had a contract. We designed the Donzies for about 10 years, which is a hot racing type boat. And now Donzie's been copied by a lot of companies. But we enjoyed that. You know, it was very interesting. Yes, I love to do boats, and I'll do those for nothing.
is your passion power boating or sailing?
Power
both. Power
boating. Not sailing.
Not sailing. No.
Stan is a sailor, and I'm the power boater.
Dan is your son.
Stan. No.
Oh, Stan. Oh, yeah. I'm sorry. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Stan Thorwald. Basically. What have you felt over the years in terms of your peers? Now, several well-known designers that you've worked with or know of are still very much involved. Bill Mitchell just retired,
yeah.
I think, from his design firm. Gordon Burig, I think, is doing still doing occasionally independent design work, and. One or two others, I think, are still involved.
Alex Tremulous.
Alex Tremulous is still doing contract.
Don De La Rosa, of course.
Oh, yeah.
Dick Teague, you know, he's at American Motors,
Dick
too.
Dick Teague, right, uh-huh.
Well, they're all getting to the age of retirement, you know.
Yeah.
And I suppose I'm at the age, but I don't intend to do it. Dean Bourdonnais, of course, I was very close to and liked very much. I thought he was a very capable executive. Mm-hmm. At Ford, he'd been retired 4 years now. Mm-hmm. Most of the team I was with at Ford have retired. Dick Teague was at Packard when I went there, and I took him to Chrysler with me. Then I brought him out here in my own company for a while, and then he went 20 years ago to American Motors as vice president. He's been there all that time. He's retiring next March. Uh-huh. And most of the people in the top design posts I've worked with at one time or another. And but now the team is changing. I'm becoming the old man of the industry here.
Are you, in other words, the era of the key seminal designer who handled the whole, or at least part of the whole package, it's now being broke up into a series of technicians, is it not?
Well, I think it has been enlarged into a much more complex thing than it used to be. When I had Lincoln Mercury Division, which was up until 55, he designed a basic Lincoln and a deluxe Lincoln, a basic Mercury, a deluxe Mercury. He designed the interiors, the panels, the wheels, and so on. Today, a man like Jack Telnack at Ford, now he must have 50 cars they're designing.
Right.
They have Gail Hallerman's in charge of small cars and Mustangs and so on, and they have other people in charge of others. There's just so many executives because there's so many different vehicles to put out.
Better product line explosion. I mean,
that's right.
Last 20 years.
Nobody can even remember all the names anymore.
Right.
You know.
So the you've now got a an army really of technicians who are doing the cars.
That's right. Yeah, specialists.
And it's become a committee kind of design situation.
Well, I think the top man still has a lot of influence. I think a man like Jack Telnack still controls a great deal of the feel of what he wants on the cars.
Right.
Because after all, a good top design man has to be a judge of what's good, what's coming, what's needed.
Right.
But he can look at all his different design drawings and all the different studios and say, I want you to go on that one and that one. In that sense, he controls a lot of what the management body sees. I think their control will always be there, but it's been departmentalized so much, you know.
You mentioned the switch from when you first came into Ford. Body engineering was pretty much calling them.
That's right.
Too.
I worked for Henry Grebe.
I never
forget his name.
And then gradually, I guess through the efforts of Jean Bournet and others, it moved back to a stylus world.
Well, basically, that changed. Henry Grebe worked, he had body engineering, and George Snyder had styling. John Oswald was an executive over both of them, so he controlled styling and body engineering. At that time, styling became an entity of its own, not working for body engineering.
This is at Ford in the 50s.
At Ford.
Yeah.
Yes. That's really when it changed from
I see. Yeah.
After that, styling stood on its own.
Mm-hmm. But now, what about the ascension of product planning? How did that come about? That had been sort of a bastard science at one point, hadn't it?
Yes, I think the need is real, but I think sometimes they have too much strength. And a lot of the people that I worked with, including Don Peterson, who was in product planning when I was styling, were very intense, very intelligent, hardworking people. But they had a job to do, and they wanted to make sure you're within certain package dimensions to fit the competition. That was their type of thing, a product that could be afforded, an engine size. But they got too strong at Ford, in my estimation. I still think you have to rely on, of course I would as a designer, but I think you have to rely on a designer's judgment on the car a great deal. It's got a real feel for cars. I think you have to have controls on him by having product planning people state out the packages that you got to fit it into and so on. But I don't think they should control what the design of the car looks
like. Decisions, yeah.
I'm afraid that's what happened
for
a long time.
the dynamics of design decision have always fascinated me. And you've just noted one of the processes in which they change. At Ford, they're beginning to institute a new system called the the design approval process, which are attempting to standardize as well as they can how a design approval is arrived at, and it becomes more of a committee feel. Have you looked into that at all?
No, I heard about it. I guess I have to say, Dave, I'm not a committee type person. I believe that a committee has its place, but it takes 2 to 3 times as long to get anything through a committee as it does having an excellent man who really knows his job and is strong enough to say so. I feel, for instance, take market surveys. There's a place for market surveys to find out what people want and so on. But to take a car and another car, put it out and say, which one do you like, to the public, they don't know. The public must be led. And usually a car has to be out a year or two before you say you like it. So you can't go to a market survey and say, which car do you want Ford to make? I think that's the wrong move. I think you have to say you got a designer who knows what he's doing, he's got a lot of experience, he has a real flair, he's a hardworking guy that can say, this is the way we have to go and here's why, sell management on it, and they do it. And the car comes out and it's a winner. But I think committees as such seldom make a brilliant decision. It's a modifying process in my mind. And I think just like Mr. Breach is a top executive and Mr. Crusoe and Mr. Nance and a few others, you need that kind of a man in a design field. You need a designer who's strong, just like some of your most famous architects. You know, the Saarinens and Frank Lloyd Wright, they're strong characters. You didn't tell Frank Lloyd Wright you didn't like his house and you don't want that wing over here. Frank Lloyd Wright told you where the house went and how it was built on the property and out of what materials, and this is the way it's going to be, and that's a Frank Lloyd Wright house. You have to have that kind of strength to be an excellent design man, you know, and a leader of a major line of products. And they're pretty rare.
Yeah.
You don't find a lot of people like that in any field. Mm-hmm. You know, architects, you know.
Right.
Designers are the same way. It's a rare man. Harley Earl was that type of a man.
Was he?
Now, I never worked with Harley Earl, but I was of the era of Harley Earl. I knew Bill Mitchell well. Spent a lot of time with Bill. Harley Earl was a big man, a powerful man. He came in, he knew the top management very well. They gave him a lot of leeway. But just by the strength of his own character and by the very fact he had the job and he was Mr. Power, he controlled what happened to GM. He set the mode.
He really brought the design studio into being.
That's right. Yeah. There haven't been a lot of Harley Earls. Mr. Loewy, Raymond Loewy, has been that in the industrial design field.
Did you work with him at Studebaker?
Yes, I did.
You mentioned the anecdote about that.
Yes, I did. When I went to Packard, that was the first thing I had to do was cancel the Loewy contract.
Oh, the Loewy contract.
And I called Mr. Loewy and talked to him, and he was a fine gentleman. I said, if I can ever help you, let me know. And he still had 7 years to run on the contract that he had, so it was quite a move.
That'd be a financial settlement.
Oh, yeah. I met him later in New York, and he and I and Bob McGuire were together in a TV show down there one day, and he got a standing ovation from the design people in the audience, just Mr. Industrial Design. But there aren't a lot of standout characters like that, you know.
It's becoming a faceless industry, pretty much, isn't it?
I'm afraid so.
The technicians.
And I wonder if design can become faceless, you know?
Well, it shouldn't.
If you're in a computer business, you put out a computer, it is competitive and so on, maybe that's one thing. But I think a designer should be able to stand up on his own, be a very strong individual. He's going to step on people a little bit because he wants it done that way, that's the way he wants it done. But if he's right, and you got a strong decision maker, he can do tremendous things product-wise. Every field has that kind of a man. You know, Hyman Rickover is that in submarines, you know. Made a lot of mistakes. Made a lot of enemies.
Oh, yeah.
He's not the most loved man in the world. But hell, what he did for submarines is tremendous, you know?
Yeah.
And so I guess you got to look at it in the overall sense, you know. You're not making friends, but you probably do a good job for your company.
The fact of having a successful product line that you fought for against committee interference and have it finally succeed commercially must be very satisfying.
It is.
Yeah.
I'll give you one more story, and then I think I'm going to have to wrap it up. But we have an excellent top executive at Ellis Chalmers, president of the agricultural group, Mr. Roy Ulner. He asked me to come in and design a new tractor for him after we'd done the Gleaner Combine for his other divisions. We made some pretty radical designs. We came up with a visor that went over the whole top of the tractor, never seen before in any tractor. We put all the stadium lights up in the front, put all the air conditioning in this thing so it's easy to clean. And this huge visor shrouded the glass and canopy below it, so you hardly needed any air conditioning. The sun couldn't hit the operator, rain couldn't hit the glass. It had a lot of pluses. We had one devil of a time trying to sell it to management. Not to Mr. Ulner so much, but the chief engineers and people that cost too much money and so on. We had a real time. I must say we persisted as a company. Women's Credit Associates went and said, we recommend this. Here's why. Nobody else has got it. We are exclusive. It's going to be the leader in the field. Here's what it does for you. Here are the pluses. And sure, it costs a little bit more money, but really could make it up and increase sales. It's been the most successful single tractor in the field today. It has been copied now by almost all of our competition. They had a three-day show out at Reno, Nevada, where they took over the 20th Century Fox, where that big hotel is, MGM. Brought in all their dealers and their wives for 3 days, and they made it a selling show. We're not just announcing our new product line to you and let you go back home and think about it and send us an order or something. We're selling them on the floor. They sold $80 million worth in 3 days to their dealers. Roy Ulner called me up. He said, it's the most terrific thing we've ever had in our history. Just filled our whole line, got our plant going for the next 8 months. $80 million worth of tractors as a result. 10 different tractors, but all the same design. So, you know, that's where, if you really persist and you know you're right and you're strong enough to sell it to management, and you can come out with a product line, you're talking big profits for that corporation.
One more quick question, and forgive me if I seem redundant. What is the Bill Schmidt philosophy of industrial design, personal philosophy of industrial design?
Well, that's something I should be able to answer very easily, and I can't. I'd say in general, industrial design really boils down to good common sense on any product you're designing, based on experience of materials, what the product's going to do. I think a good designer is really a man who puts his thinking hat on and comes up with a real good, solid answer, making it simpler, making it more functional, making it a profitable product to produce because it's economically designed and can be produced and manufactured. No simple answer to what you're saying. It's the ramifications are tremendous because there's so many facets.
Right.
But from a design, it usually has to be the old saying, form follows functions, and all those things. They're really true. Mm-hmm. But good common sense applied to any product design is really the best way to get a job done.
Thank you, Mr. Schmidt.
You're welcome.